This is an audio clip on the beginnings of socio-rhetorical interpretation of 1 Corinthians chapter 3 using guidelines from an understanding of early Christian rhetorics or rhetorical dialects. It presupposes that the listener has basic knowledge of the six early Christian rhetorical dialects or rhetorics as they have recently been defined and discussed in socio-rhetorical interpretation. These six rhetorics are wisdom, apocalyptic, pre-creation, which refers to the time prior to God's creation of the world, prophetic, miracle, and priestly rhetorics. Wisdom, apocalyptic, pre-creation, prophetic, miracle, and priestly. When one begins to read 1 Corinthians 3, one immediately runs into multiple images that indicate wisdom rhetorics. Immediately, Paul refers to the Corinthians whom he's addressing as brothers, or as it says in the New Revised Standard Version, which will be a basis for my comments here, brothers and sisters. This language of brothers and sisters evokes the imagery of a household and family, which is the basic environment for beginnings of wisdom rhetorics as they are then blended with the created world, which is perceived to be a place over which God is Father and God provides food and nurturing in the created order as though it were a household with a father over it. As the verses proceed in chapter 3, there is reference then to feeding infants with milk and the desire for infants to grow up into people who can use solid food. This growth and this issue of feeding is just a natural internal part of wisdom rhetorics. When a person gets to verse 6 in chapter 3, plants are introduced which are watered for the purpose of growing and God giving growth to these plants in verse 7. This again is natural dynamic of early Christian wisdom rhetorics that blends together the imagery of growth in the household with growth in God's creation as it was created for the purpose of multiplying, growing, becoming plentiful in Genesis chapters 1 through 3. This imagery of growing with plants continues through verse 8. A person notices a decisive shift of imagery in verse 13 to the day that will disclose the work of each builder, and the day will reveal with fire what the worker has done. Here then, there is a decisive shift in verse 13 to apocalyptic rhetorics. Then when we get to verse 16, there's a decisive shift to a discussion of God's temple. This introduces priestly rhetorics. When one gets to verse 18, again, one sees language about wise and fools and wisdom of this world. One is back again at wisdom rhetorics. But one notices that it is a matter of being wise in this age, thus introducing this age and the coming age of apocalyptic. Also, it speaks of the wisdom of this world, which presupposes the wisdom of another world. Again, the basic difference between this age and the apocalyptic other age. And verse 22 then talks about the present or the future in such a way that one can see that there's a blending of wisdom and apocalyptic rhetoric in verses 18 through 23 that end the chapter. One wonders if priestly rhetoric has gone thoroughly into the background, or if somehow it remains here in these final verses. The first task then is to identify major dominant rhetoric throughout the passage, and one sees that dominant rhetoric in chapter 3, verses 1 through 8, certainly, is wisdom rhetoric. The dominant rhetoric in verses 13 through 15 is apocalyptic rhetoric, and the dominant rhetoric in verse 16 is priestly rhetoric. The question then becomes what kind of blending occurs throughout a passage, and the question must be raised if there are rhetorics in the background that may be sometimes informing a verse without presenting explicit imagery from a rhetoric in such a way that that rhetoric is clearly dominant in the discourse. The first feature one encounters that raises a question of a background rhetoric is in verse 1, when Paul refers to people being spiritual people. What is the nature of a spiritual person? An immediate possibility of a background rhetoric for the talk about spiritual people in verse 1 is priestly rhetoric that appears in verse 16. Perhaps the concept is that human beings, when they grow to be adults, become then spiritual beings who know how to live a sacrificial life. They know how to give thanks to God, how to praise God. They know how to pray. Thus, their body is essentially a temple of God. And this is exactly the image that Paul evokes in verse 16. Do you not know that you are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in you? Here is the language of Spirit, which could be a factor in energizing a concept of spiritual people. The Spirit dwells in people in such a way that they are like a temple. Thus, this is priestly rhetoric. An alternative might be that becoming a spiritual person, is a kind of miraculous thing that happens through the power of God. In chapter 2, verse 4, Paul emphasized, "My speech and my proclamation were not with plausible words of wisdom, but with a demonstration of the Spirit and of power, so that your faith might rest not on human wisdom, but on the power of God." In the background, then, could it be the case that for people to become spiritual people, as Paul talks about them in verse 1 of chapter 3, the power of God must work in them, and must work in them in ways that are perceived to be basically miraculous? Is it possible, then, that verse 1 has a touch of miracle rhetorics in it then, and maybe a kind of blend of miracle rhetorics focused on the power of God to change people into something they could not otherwise become, that is blended with an orientation toward priestly rhetorics, where people function as God's temples on earth with God's Spirit dwelling in them? Or is there still another possibility? Namely, a possibility that becoming a spiritual person is focused on the movement from this age to the next age. One thinks then of 1 Corinthians chapter 15, where Paul talks specifically about resurrection, namely that dramatic apocalyptic event where humans are resurrected from the dead. He says specifically there in chapter 15 that fleshly people will become spiritual beings when they are raised from the dead. As Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 46, but it is not the spiritual that is first, but the physical, and then the spiritual. The first man was from the earth, a man from dust. The second man is from heaven. The imagery is that humans are physical, and then through a process of apocalyptic transformation, they become spiritual. So, do we have a blend of actually three background rhetorics already in verse 1 of chapter 3 in 1 Corinthians? Namely, a blend of miracle rhetorics, of priestly rhetorics, and of apocalyptic rhetorics? Or is it dominantly oriented toward one of those three? Differences of interpretation of this passage will depend very much on decisions that interpreters make with regard to a preference for miracle, apocalyptic, or priestly rhetorics here. When there is an emphasis on apocalyptic, the interpreter may notice Paul's references to time in verse 2 of chapter 3, namely that they are not ready yet for solid food because they are still of the flesh, as he said in verse 3. This focus on being still of one kind but may yet be something beyond this may be introducing the time scheme, what is called the temporality of apocalyptic rhetorics. The way in which verses 5 through 17 unfold in their progressive texture in 1 Corinthians 3 might suggest to a person that priestly rhetorics is really one of the strongest dynamics here in this context, because moving through the growth of humans to the growth of plants, in verse 9, already Paul introduces God's building. And this imagery of building and a foundation that's laid and then building upon it and a skilled master worker who worked on the building in verse 10, moving down in verse 11 to the foundation of the building is Jesus Christ, is going progressively down to verses 16 and 17, which talk about the body as God's temple and God's Spirit dwelling in that body. And it merges dynamically then in verse 17 with apocalyptic rhetorics. If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy that person, for God's temple is holy, and you are that temple. So, once again, even a focus on priestly rhetorics takes one to apocalyptic rhetoric. Maybe then, in an interpretation, one will want to emphasize that priestly rhetoric and apocalyptic rhetoric seem to be playing a major role here, rather than miracle rhetoric per se. In other words, the power of God emphasized in miracle rhetoric has been brought into the dynamics of apocalyptic rhetoric, in which also is very present a focus on holiness, on the spirituality which is necessary to enter the kingdom, and thus the focus on power is really dynamically a blend of apocalyptic and priestly rhetoric here. It is very noticeable how Paul returns to wisdom rhetoric in verse 18, speaking directly about being wise over against being foolish. But now one notices that it's a matter of being wise in this age. This is a blend of wisdom and apocalyptic rhetoric. Likewise, verse 19 speaks of the wisdom of this world, which again is an apocalyptic reference to this world in relation to the wisdom of another world. Then in verse 22, Paul speaks about the present and the future. Thus, one might want to suggest that apocalyptic and wisdom are a dominant dynamic blend at the end, in such a way that we have a new kind of Christian wisdom then, a wisdom that internally contains very strong dynamics of priestly rhetoric with a very strong focus on God's revelation of new kinds of things through an understanding of the sequence from this age to a coming age, which is internal to apocalyptic rhetoric.